This here on Raider Nation Radio, Clay Baker, Vinny Bonsignor, and you up online at lvsportsnetwork.com. Stream it every day on our app, LV Sports Network. Make sure you get the app. It's good for iPhone, good for Android. Go to the Google Play Store or the Apple Store and get it today. It's free, free, free. Also hit us up at 702-365-9200 and send the word stadium. Text the word stadium to 702-365-9200 so you can qualify to win this week's prize from the Summer of Fun from Planet Nissan, a three-day vacation here in Las Vegas with Sphere shows and Cirque du Soleil, as well as Alejandro Fernandez tickets. Oh, and $1,000 spending cash? Or you just take the $3,000 payout. It's up to you, but only if you text it in today. Stadium to 702-365-9200. Marcus Johnson joins us now from Tape Don't Lie up on YouTube. Do yourself a favor for this holiday weekend. You want some Raiders content? They got it for you, baby. YouTube, Tape Don't Lie. Marcus Johnson here with us. Does such a great job. Also on X at TheMarkJohnNFL. And what I really enjoyed, Marcus, is this week's installments as you kind of like approached, what does Luke Getsy's passing offense look like in comparison to games that he has been the OC before? And you took a case example from a game against the Washington Commanders from 2023. What did the tape show? Marcus is back with us here. Marcus Johnson here with us. Tape Don't Lie. Marcus, thanks for being with us. Good morning to you. All right, talk about the Luke Getsy offense. You did some great breakdowns on TDL about the Luke Getsy passing offense against the Commanders from 2023. What did we learn from this?
So, you know, with Luke Getsy, one thing that you really learn that is that he's really good with the deep passing concept. I think he really finds a way to get guys open and get guys into space and really where he really wants to put them to, and really does a good job of attacking coverages and knowing when to attack that coverage and has a good idea of what the team's going to play that week and how they're going to try to stop them. So I think he does a good job of kind of mixing it up in that way. And one thing I did notice, though, just watching Luke Getsy, is how much that he used a fullback last year. And how they don't have a fullback right now at all on this football team, to be honest. And since they don't have that type of player, you kind of figure out like where Brett Flowers fits in a little bit, maybe how they'll use him, maybe how they'll run some routes that maybe are designed for a fullback that they were running with last year with the Bears. They were running a different type of concepts with the fullback because he was kind of athletic that he was able to run some routes and they could do those same things with Brock Bowers. So I think that's one thing I really started to notice the more and more I watched Luke Getsy's offense, is that a fullback was a part of it, and they had a lot of where they're running 22 personnel. So there's no fullback on this roster, so it's going to be more 13, and you know, having Harrison Brown on the field a little bit as well, and it's going to be able to mix it up more than just 12 personnel.
Just a quick question, though. How much can we just throw away of last year's tape from the Chicago Bears? Because there isn't a quarterback on the Raiders roster, at least the top two quarterbacks, that are in any way, shape, or form similar to Justin Fields. It felt like Luke Getsy had to change everything that he probably does or believes in to fit an offensive scheme that fit the quarterback. And so, therefore, is it a moot point what he did last year with the Chicago Bears?
I don't think it's fully a moot point, but you know, I definitely understand what you're talking about. I mean, because there's definitely a lot of the way it's the run game. I think the run game, when you watch Justin Fields more, is what you really should be taken out of it, because it's a lot of zone read, right? So it's going to be inside zone and those type of looks, because it's natural zone read runs, right? You're not going to see that. Maybe with Gardner Minshew, they might show those looks a little bit more, but, you know, Aiden O'Connell's not going to fool anybody. You know, him running TV suits, they're not going to fool anybody, right? So, yeah, so it's going to be different that way. I mean, that's why you have to kind of even watch imagine a little bit and watch the game that he plays, and then you get a little bit more of an idea of what it's going to look like with more of the short passing game and a lot of those concepts that they'll be running if, you know, Aiden O'Connell's a starter, even Gardner Minshew, because, you know, Gardner Minshew can't do that vertical game that much, right? So I think with the run game, it gets a little different, especially when you're watching Justin Fields, because that run game is going to be, it's not going to be a part of it, right? So That's why you got to watch probably more Badgett, and it's good to have him on that film. And then you can even go back a little bit, and you can see some, I believe in 2022, there was a little bit of Andy Dalton in there. So you can see a little bit of him, too, as well. So you can kind of get a mixture of what they would do with more of a guy that fits what's in the Raiders quarterback room right now.
We're speaking with Marcus Johnson here with us. Tape Don't Lie. We're here on the morning Tailgate Raider Nation Radio. Then let's go back to what you were saying earlier about lots of deep pass concepts. When it comes to those kind of pass concepts, what did you notice about either the route runs or how long it took to get rid of the ball?
I think one thing that Getsy does teach is it's got for these players to find space against zone, trying to see and read the field and just don't run a straight line. Like if you're running the go route and you see an opening, you can take that opening. And there's a lot of adjustments to what the zone defense is doing with the vertical passing game. So I think, it doesn't always have to be like a 60-yard pass. I think the vertical really can show itself around the 25 to 35, around the 25 to 30-yard line before they even get in the red zone, what they call kind of like the fringe is what they call it. And then even when you get in the red zone, you can do a lot of those vertical passing because, it's still from the 20. Maybe the inside from the 10, it gets a little different. But when you're still in that situation where you're inside the 20 and a quarterback, he's dropping it back and he's throwing the ball from the 24-yard line, there's still a vertical pass and you mix up the vertical passing game. And I think he does a good job of having these guys get into space and also, using motions and knowing when to get players one-on-ones on safeties and stuff like that.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Offensive line-wise, what do you expect the changes to look like schematically under Luke Getsy offense with the Raiders this year?
Yeah, I think just even bringing in James Gregory to see more wide zone, I think that's going to be a thing that is going to be a part of this offense is the zone. But, they might try to mix it up and do a lot more split zone. Maybe do some more inside zone as well. We really didn't see inside zone last year with the Raiders. They ran a lot of duo, which is similar, but it's definitely it's a different read from the running back itself. So the inside zone is going to be something that we're going to be seeing this year too. And then, but the big one is wide zone. I think last year, even when Zamir White was playing, you didn't see too much wide zone. There's one in the middle that a lot of people talk about called mid zone, where it kind of has the appearance of an outside zone run, but it's basically an inside zone run. So they didn't run too much wide zone with Zamir White, so it's not a lot of film of him running natural wide zone last year. So even when you go down, you look at the games, the Colts game, they ran basically just pure power, and then they mixed it up a little bit with the Chiefs game and the Broncos game, some of those games you finished, but you didn't see any pure wide zone. So that's going to be something that's going to be interesting. Madison has more experience running pure wide zone than Zamir White, but Zamir White's going to get the chance to kind of take the reins there. And he did good with the mid zone and the split zones. I think he did better than I thought going into watching some film this week on him about that. But I think that's going to be the difference in the run game. We're going to see more wide zone this year than ever before.
Explain how Zamir White, what kind of system will he work best in? Because we saw what he could do in like those power run games. But what about through the wide zone? Because as you mentioned, last year, not much to look at as far as the tape and with the progressions or the plays that they were running for Zamir.
I think we hear a zone scheme, I think sometimes you have to remember that there is some north and south part of a zone scheme. So I think that's what they have to mix it up. When they get him in there, and you might not do as much wide zone as maybe you plan to do that you might do with Madison. I think they're still going to try to do, especially earlier on in the season, they're going to do a little bit more of a campaign, right, and try to see what Madison can do, mix it up. And when you get Madison in there, he's going to have more experience with the wide zone. And when you run with Zamir White, you don't have to get away from the zone game, but that's when you run like split zone or even those inside zone or mid zone, those other types of runs that you can mix up there. I mean, Getsy does like to do tosses as well. I mean, he does like to do a lot of power tosses. So the power game can still be mixed in with Zamir White.
Okay.
You don't want to get too zone crazy with him, I believe, but I think there are elements of the zone game that he'll be able to run he's just a better north and south runner than he is, more of a outside zone cut and find the cutback hole runner. So that when you run inside zone and split zone, you could be more north and south, but it's still part of the zone run game. And you don't have to get away from your scheme.
Marcus, NFL.com put out a rookie impact players to watch, or rookies to watch. One player in particular that they pointed out was Tommy Eichenberg, the Raiders rookie linebacker from Ohio State. And one thing that they pointed out was that he might be able to see the field as that middle linebacker, allowing Robert Spillane and Divine Diablo to move to the outside. But for me, that would be a departure in a way of what Patrick Graham likes to do. He's been typically a two linebacker, scheme-wise, especially last year, a two linebacker set with an extra defensive back. Do you see the Raiders maybe making some room for Tommy to get on the field with a three linebacker set?
Not really. I wouldn't expect that, especially, you know, we're in the AFC. I mean, mm-hmm. maybe if they're in the AFC and there's more of a running game, you know, that's what I'm noticing, just, you know, going through these quarterbacks this summer, that the AFC it looks like it's the AFL for the NFL.
Right.
the AFC is the passing league. We have to be ready to stop the pass. I mean, that's what we're playing the most. I mean, we only play four NFC teams a year. The other 13 games against AFC teams, and they all got quarterbacks who can throw the ball everywhere, right? So you have to be ready for those type of teams, and you're going to play two linebackers. You're going to have a nickel because you're going to see more 11 personnel, you know, playing in against AFC teams than you are going to see them playing against NFC teams. So, I mean, that's why you see some of these AFC teams, they play an NFC team, and the NFC team just runs all over them because they're just not built to stop that team. So the Raiders have to worry about what's happening in the AFC, and they're going to have these two linebackers on the field. They've got Nate Hobbs playing the slot, and Nate Hobbs can tackle. He can play against the run. He can take on guards. That's what he's there for, and that's one of the things that's why he's one of the better slot defenders in the league, because he can blitz, he can tackle, and he can cover. So if you have a player like that, you're able to play more nickel, and then when you get the dime, you can bring Palomalu in and mix it up that way. But you have to be ready to stop the pass, because, I mean, even in the division they play in, they got Justin Herbert, they got Patrick Mahomes. I mean, whatever other division you're playing in, they probably got some pretty good quarterbacks. They got a good young quarterback you got to deal with. So I think in the AFC, you got to stick with the nickel and the two linebackers. Maybe in the NFC, maybe you mix it up a little bit more, and maybe that's when you play an NFC team, you're ready for that. But at this point, you got to stick with two linebackers.
You know, with the Raiders finishing 21st last year in rushing yards allowed, their defense, did the Raiders do enough in the offseason to help improve that? Or did you see the improvement in the second half of last season in those rushing defense numbers?
You know, I think that they are going to be one of the better run defending teams in the league. I think last year, that's probably one of the best things they did was stop the run. I think John Jenkins is a player that was very underrated in the area. Definitely had a impact on stopping the run, especially even at the beginning of the year. They did a pretty good job of it. It's like the Colts game kind of just all kind of went away. I don't know what happened in that game. You know, when you watch it on film, I think the Colts just were ready for them scheme wise and just had did a good job of understanding how their defensive line works. So, but the other teams, I mean, they were able to control the run game. I mean, that's why they were able to keep the Chiefs into third and longs, and that's when you see like Max Crosby and those guys able to eat when you could stop the run and you know, impact it that way. And I think they're going to be consistent there. You know, I think Spillane had a lot of growth last year, but when you have Max Crosby on the defensive line, you had Christian Wilkins, and then Malcolm Kuntz is showing growth. Tyree Wilson is getting better, and then you know, you can put in Adam Butler, and then he comes in pass rushes. I think that defensive line is going to set the tone. It opened it up for the linebackers. I think they're going to be pretty good against the run.
Yeah, and talking to Marcus Johnson from Tape Don't Lie, Kobe Bryant used to talk all the time about working on his weaknesses, not his strengths, during the offseason. And to me, one of the underrated parts of Max Crosby's game, and credit to him, because it wasn't so good early on, but that's okay. That's what growth and development is all about. But run defense, in terms of the run defense, he's turned himself into a pretty damn good run defender, and that wasn't his strength coming into the season. What does the tape tell you about how Max Crosby has developed as a run stopper?
It's just understanding of what people do in the run game. And also, he just has that motor where he doesn't stop, and he's able to guess. Most of the time he's right, so he's able to kind of just jump things. He'll know when the run is coming. Definitely a lot of studying of what offensive line schemes are. You can tell that he just is basically a student of the game at this point, and that's why he's so good at, you know, stopping the run, because also he's relentless. So he's going to keep coming. I mean, there's tackles he's made on the other side of the field that you'd be watching on film, and I think the way he plays the run, it it goes into all the other players. I mean, they start playing the run just as hard as he does. And those guys, just a lot of pass rushers these days, I mean, they'll take the playoff on a run a little bit. But, you know, Max Crosby is just relentless, and his understanding of what's going to happen. Like, you really don't want to run to his side, because if you try to, like, do a toss to the side, and maybe you can get him to crash inside on some looks, and maybe he can guess wrong every once in a while, and maybe frustrate some fans there. But I think most of the time, he's going to guess right. He's going to be relentless, and he's going to just, like I said, we're in the AFC. Everybody's expecting pass. I mean, we got even the tackles are expected to stop the pass. I mean, he's going to attack those guys every single play and have them thinking about the run game too as well. It just plays a big factor.
You know, there was also something from Tape Don't Lie when you talked about the Luke Getsy offense that just kind of made me stand up a little bit. And you outlined a play where Cole Kmet was put in motion, their tight end, the Bears tight end, and it was put up one-on-one against a linebacker. And this is like, you know, I think the ball was on the 5 or 6 yard line, and they roll in. It was an easy pass for a touchdown for Justin Fields. Is that what maybe we might start to expect from the way tight ends might be used in this offense?
Yeah, I think tight ends are going to be a big factor in this offense. And I think it's going to be very helpful for even Gardner Minshew. But when you have a young quarterback like Aiden O'Connell, I think keeping everything to the middle of the field, it really helps. And I think one thing Aiden O'Connell did well last year was play-action passing. Like, I think his passer rating and without play-action was like 78, and with play-action was about 101.8. So that mixture there, you're going to have to kind of do some play-action passing with him, and I think the tight end in the middle of the field is going to be a big factor. But, you know, one thing that Luke Getsy does well is create matchups issues, and I think that's one thing that you'll see coming from a lot of those guys that come from Kyle Shanahan, because that's what Kyle Shanahan does best. I mean, he gets Brandon Ayuk on safeties all the time, and it's that matchup that you find. If you can move a guy over and you get a one-on-one with a linebacker and you get a Cole Kmet, he's going to win that right away, right? I mean, he's got that type of tight end. And you can find ways to do that with Davante Adams, get him on a matchup where it's easy for them to win and maybe not to face like a Sauce Gardner all the time. So you just have to move these guys around a little bit. You can find those matchups, and that's the important thing on tape. And that's one thing I really like that he does.
What you got cooking this weekend? It's a little bit of extended of a holiday weekend for Tape Don't Lie. You're doing some fantastic work, Marcus. What's in store for us?
So we've got Zamir White. I'm going to look at actually all of Zamir White's own runs today on the episode. I'm doing John Jenkins, so check that out. The episode should be dropping tonight. And then this weekend, you know, probably just, you know, kind of relax a little bit with the 4th of July. We can kind of get back to it next week and just actually deep dive into a little bit what's going on with 12 personnel and how that's going to look, because it's going to be a big factor this year.
Great stuff, Marcus. Thank you so much for your time. Let's do it again next week.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Follow him on X at TheMarkJohnNFL. And Tape Don't Lie, make sure you subscribe to it up on YouTube. You'd be glad you did. And just an outline of some of the stuff that he brought up about the Getsy offense. Using a fullback a lot last year with Chicago. But you know what? Without a fullback on this roster, how exciting is that to think of how the tight ends could be deployed in this manner? Because we know Brock Bowers can be interchangeable in many different facets and line up on all sorts of parts of the field. You know, we even saw Cole Fotheringham even line up at fullback a little bit last year, taking on some of those blocking duties. I would love to see this play out, because that would be part of this, you know, intentionality of using your tight ends to start creating mismatches, but also creating a lot of deception.
Yeah, for sure. But for me, the fact that they don't have and I'm with you, that he will line up in that formation or that position from time to time this year. But to me, the not having a fullback on the roster this year pretty much tells you all you need to know about how different things are going to look for Luke Getsy and the Raiders compared to what he had in Chicago. And I'll say this, Luke Getsy to me is a prime example of be aware of what you're getting into. Don't just jump at the first chance to go be a, you know, I know that was a step up for him, and it's led him here to the Raiders, going from wide receiver coach to offensive coordinator with the Chicago Bears. But Marcus mentioned Andy Dalton. Andy Dalton was actually there the year before Luke Getsy got there. So he wasn't even on the roster when Luke Getsy was there. These are the quarterbacks that he had to work with: Justin Fields, Trevor Siemian, Nathan Peterman, Tim Boyle, and we'll go to last year. It was basically Baguette and Justin Fields.
Yeah, Tyson Bagent and Fields.
Yeah, Tyson Bagent. So
not the who's
careful.
Who.
Be careful what you're getting yourself into, because I say this and I mean this. Whatever the Bears did the last couple of years with those quarterbacks, especially Justin Fields, throw it out the window, because he's just you have to do so many different things – to get an offense around a quarterback like Justin Fields compared to what you have now. Not to say that one's better than the other. It's just different.
No, it's just different. But I think you take a look at what concepts could be to say, like, all right, is there some sort of like a defining characteristic that says, oh, he really likes to use a lot of deep pass concepts. But maybe it's just because you're just adapting to whatever you have.
That's my point.
Yeah.
He had to adapt to what he had to work with. And the goal was, the objective was, develop Justin Fields or figure out an offense that works for Justin Fields. And, you know, I would contend that Justin Fields let down the Bears and I'm not faulting for him for this. He is what he is as a quarterback, and he has a long way to go.
Oh yeah, he's a young player. He's got a long career ahead.
I don't know if he has a long career ahead of him necessarily.
He might.
But what I'm saying is there's limitations that you have to deal with as an offense with a quarterback like Justin Fields. It just is what it is. So the reason I'm saying this is because it's hard to judge Luke Getsy on what he did and on what he had to work with in terms of the quarterback in Chicago. So kind of get that image out of your mind. And I know what we're doing because there's some carryover effects that he's going to have, structurally from what he did with the Bears to what he did with the Raiders. But you know, the quarterbacks that he has to work with the Raiders fit what he tried to do, what he does, a little bit more than what he tried to do in Chicago with Justin Fields. So it's kind of a whole different world, which will be interesting. Now let's see if he can get the most out of either Gardner Minshew or Aiden O'Connell. But it is a completely different deal, and it's why it's tough sometimes with a quarterback like Justin Fields to get that figured out, because it's just so different than what other quarterbacks, what their strengths and weaknesses are. So his offense, Luke Getsy's offense, if you go back to his history and the Green Bay Packers, it relies on precision throwing, on time, accurate. None of those things are what Justin Fields is, unfortunately for Justin Fields. And that's what he needs to get out of a Gardner Minshew and an Aiden O'Connell. But it will be interesting to see what now he's capable of doing, Luke Getsy, with a more traditional type quarterback situation.
Could be, yeah. Like all good offensive coordinators, they always try to create mismatches or create matchups that are favorable. And to think that even last year, in the amount of time that Aiden O'Connell was on the field, his passer rating, according to Marcus, was 101.8 with play action.
Mm-hmm.
You know, yeah. So also take a look at what that will bring, because they really didn't run a whole lot of play action up until a certain part of the year. And maybe when you think about what changes could be, they're still going to have an offensive coordinator that's going to try to find matchups that are favorable, but maybe more play action helps this a young quarterback grow a little further and get more confidence in what they need with right guided missiles and accuracy.
And that's the key, is it helps. The key to the whole thing: can your quarterback be accurate with the ball? That's what Justin Fields wasn't, and they tried all different various things, for him, and it just never really translated to a high level. That's why he's on to team number two. So it will be interesting to see how different this thing looks. And we keep going back to this: it's predicated on the quarterbacks being able to play precision, efficient football. By the way, it's always a good time to talk about our friends over at LendingStore.com. And the reason I bring this up is it's the summer, it's the holiday weekend. Things come up, whether you're planning a trip or a wedding, the car breaks down. There's all sorts of different things that come up through the course of our life. And it means having to find money to take care of some situations. And maybe you're in a situation right now where you need $500 or $5,000, like right now. And maybe the credit cards are maxed out. Maybe the credit isn't where it needs to be. Don't worry. Don't sweat it. Don't lose any sleep. Because for over 20 years, the experts at LendingStore.com have helped millions of people who needed cash quickly. And all credit types are welcome. Now cash is as close as your phone and as soon as tomorrow. So when you need cash, why wait? Go over to LendingStore.com. Let them help you find a lender that could get you $500 to $5,000 as early as tomorrow. All details are at LendingStore.com.
Marcus Peters met him at the three, and he went right through his arms into the end zone. Foreman's third touchdown on Bajant's first touchdown pass of his career.
That Bears game took years off of my life. We're back here on Raider Nation Radio. here on this Wednesday. We are off Thursday and Friday, so we'll join you next week here. Coming back there, Raider Nation Radio, Jason Horwitz. You could hear the disgust in his voice on that 30-12 loss in the Windy City from last year on Raider Nation Radio. And it's like, all right, so talking about, like, what do you glean from some of the Getsy stuff and how different the roles were, because you have to adapt to a system that is with a quarterback like Justin Fields, who's very unique and very unlike what the Raiders have behind center.
Yeah, you know, you look at Justin Fields' completion percentage, 60% last year, not good at all. 58% the previous season, not good at all. Again, this is a West Coast offense. One of the things that the West Coast offense predicates or you know, is a version of the West Coast offense that's in Luke Getsy's blood and his background is precision throwing. And, you know, we'll see if either Gardner Minshew or Aiden O'Connell are capable of being that type of quarterback that this offense really requires. But certainly their profiles, their skill sets are different than Justin Fields. Mm-hmm. And therefore, I think it gives them a chance to be more like the quarterback that this type of an offense requires, as opposed to what Luke Getsy had to work with in Chicago. And I go back to this. I'm not even sure why the 49ers, you know, would have hired Luke Getsy as his offensive offensive coordinator, knowing what type of quarterback that they had, unless they just felt like, you know, we can make Justin Fields this type of quarterback. And that's always a problem.
That's always a problem, and it's almost derails what an offensive coordinator would like to do, because you know that you just can't change somebody.
No, and you know that's why, you know, I know Greg Roman, you know,
example.
He caught his flack. He's caught his flack over the years, but you know, he had Lamar. He understood what type of quarterback he had in Lamar Jackson, mm-hmm. and how to best utilize a quarterback like Lamar Jackson. Now Lamar has, I think he's obviously a superior quarterback to Justin Fields.
Okay.
A better thrower, more accurate thrower. But there are some unique, unique skill set there that you have to, as an offensive coordinator, be aware of and take advantage of. And don't ask him to do things that are not his strengths. Play to his strengths. And I thought Greg Roman did that beautifully with a Lamar Jackson. Now Lamar has kind of graduated to the new offensive coordinator that they have, and they're trying to,
sure,
you know, kind of continue to build.
And maybe Greg Roman's best work was with Colin Kaepernick, you know, because
sure,
they understood that there was some great escape runs that Kaepernick could do. But even Greg Roman couldn't fix the fact that when flushed to his left, Kaepernick's completion percentage dropped precipitously when he had to go to his left, and eventually defenses caught up with that.
Yeah, and they brought in a new head coach in Chip Kelly, and you know, things kind of went downhill from there for Colin Kaepernick, even though he was playing reasonably well that last season. Now Greg Roman is in Los Angeles with Justin Herbert, so it'll be interesting to see some of the changes. Or I would consider the help that offensive system is going to give a Justin Herbert, you know, in terms of the run game and the run concepts and you know, not being so pass happy, being able to be dedicated to the run, which is everywhere Greg Roman has gone. That's been huge part of what they do, going all the way back to Stanford with Andrew Luck. They don't ask the quarterback, not that they don't ask the quarterback, but they don't require the quarterback to be the savior time and time again and all the time. They want to create balance. And I think that's what the Chargers are going to strive to do. Now, do they have the running backs to be able to pull that off? I don't know if they're there quite yet in terms of that room. But it will be interesting to see what Greg Roman does in terms of helping Justin Herbert. Whereas, again, in Chicago, I'm not sure. I still to this day don't see the fit between what Luke Getsy was, his background, and what he did in Green Bay, and how that translated to Chicago, other than Chicago brass and the leaders in Chicago believing that Justin Fields could be something that he wasn't. And
yeah,
it just didn't work.
Now, great call on that. It's Vinny and Clay here on your Wednesday. We thank you for listening. We're going to take a break and come back with Ash Watkins from Salmon Ash Injury Law for a little street legal. We got to talk about the NFL class action lawsuit that was settled $4.7 billion on the ruling against DirecTV and their policies. We'll talk about that, as well as a strange story that's going on out of Utah State. All that and more is with Ash in Street Legal from Salmon Ash Injury Law. That's next.
Back to the Morning Tailgate with Clay and Vinny.
Oh, we got a long way to go and a short time to get there. It's Street Legal with Salmon Ash Injury Law, salmonashlaw.com. And Ash is here with us. It's all part of our Street Legal scene here. We do on Wednesdays at this time. New phone number for Salmon Ash. If you are hurt or injured in a crash, call Salmon Ash, 702-303-0333. And Ash is here with us. Oh, Ash, thank you so much. And thank you for wanting to talk about the recent settlement between the NFL and DirecTV and its subscribers. This is a premium service that we've all know very well, the Sunday Ticket. And you know what? Finally, getting some restitution is interesting, especially the numbers that came out as a jury in U.S. District Court ordered the NFL to pay more than $4.7 billion in damages. The jury then awarded damages to residential subscribers. And there's also not just a class action lawsuit, but there's antitrust lawsuits here that could say that the damages could be tripled upwards and having the NFL liable to possibly over $14 billion. So please just start off with explaining and compare and contrast the difference between class action and antitrust laws.
Oh, man, Clay.
In just 30 seconds.
Right. Yeah. In just 30 seconds, yeah. Right before a holiday. Okay.
And I'll put down the potato salad and let's go.
So first and foremost, you can have an antitrust case without necessarily a class action.
Okay,
antitrust
sure.
laws. There's two types. There's private lawsuits and criminal prosecutions. And they're all brought within the Sherman Antitrust Act, which prohibits conspiracies that restrain trade or competition. So basically, agreements between competitors that result in price fixing, wage restrictions, allocations of various customers, et cetera, that's not allowed. So we've seen it historically. Remember, Microsoft was determined to be too big. It was, you know, Microsoft and Windows, and every computer you bought had Microsoft Windows on it and was pre-installed with Word, and the government came in and said, no, break it up. Like, it's just too, it restricts competition amongst other computers, processing services, etc. We're seeing it also with Ticketmaster and Live Nation,
okay,
where Live Nation is forcing all the venues that want Live Nation concerts to use Ticketmaster. The argument there is that they're so large that it's restricting any type of competition with respect to pricing or, you know, fees, et cetera. So here what happened is Sunday Ticket was trying to go to, they were selling this package all is one for these out-of-market games, and you had to buy them, and you had to buy them at an extremely high premium price and it with one entity. And so what this lawsuit is all about is going, look, I'm an out-of-market person. I want to have options when I go to buy it. I want to be able to shop around and figure out, well, can I just get one of the games? Do I have to buy them all?
Right.
Could I get them from someone that maybe, you know, gives me a few more commercials or lower quality than now YouTube? And what this jury said is, yeah, this was a violation of antitrust laws because it restricted true competition of the out-of-market Sunday afternoon games. All the class action is the fact that there are a lot of people this affected, that there are all these people that subscribed. It's very clear everyone has the same damage because it was this cost of subscription. Mm-hmm. The issues are all the same. And so that's why you do a class action. So, you know, the NFL's not facing like hundreds of thousands of these individual lawsuits. You just do them all at once.
Okay.
So that's the difference.
Oh, okay. That makes a lot of sense because, you know, even a friend of mine who owned the Eagles bar out here, he has written proof of where like DirecTV and the NFL says, we have locked in your price. It's a lot because, you know, if you have a venue that has like 300 people for, you know, for you can fit 300 people in there. He had to pay like $8,000 a month just to watch the Eagles games. OK. And it kept rising. You know, they locked him in at a price for $5,000.
Yep.
And then now it's up to $8,000. So there's no way to like even make a profit out of this at all. So I was wondering about a guy like him and other bar and tavern owners. Could they get in on this restitution?
Probably, yeah. I mean, the original plaintiff in this lawsuit was a bar owner up in Northern California.
Okay.
And so, yeah, this is for all the people that subscribed to Sunday Ticket, this is the issue. And so, I mean, it's a lot of money, Clay. I mean, the NFL is looking at a lot of money.
Yeah, and I wonder how this will be dispersed. Is this enough to appeal, or would they want to like avoid any more bad perception around the product? Because we know that the most important asset for the NFL is the image of the shield.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting what the NFL decides to do, because an appeal doesn't like necessarily get you out of paying this right away, because it accrues interest. So that's why a lot of people, after a judgment, we see this in a lot of cases, when a verdict comes in for a large amount of money, the person on the losing end goes, I'm going to appeal this, and it's going to be years for you to see a penny. And so you'll often maybe reach a settlement of, it's not the giant verdict that was rendered, but it's a guaranteed payment today. I don't know what the NFL is going to do. They're going to have to do some soul searching first and foremost to see what their likely victories are on appeal. And, you know, they've already lost once. That's how this case stayed alive. So it'll be interesting.
It's Ash Watkins here. Sam and Ash Injury Law, samandashlaw.com, available both in Nevada and in California. Write this number down, because if you're ever injured in a crash, you want to call Sam and Ash, 702-303-0333, here with us on Raider Nation Radio. Just real quickly, there's the story that kind of opened up this week out of Utah State. They're going to terminate football coach Blake Anderson's employment for violating university policy. It looks as though that he's going to have to answer to disclosures of sexual misconduct, including domestic violence. How do privacy rights for a coach or an employee of a public university come into play at all? Because if there is a domestic dispute between a coach and his wife, does he have to report this to his employer because of Title IX?
Oh, wow. Well, okay, so first and foremost, I don't know if he himself is facing allegations of sexual misconduct or domestic violence. From the statement I read, it sounds like he is being terminated for violating Title IX's requirements for reporting.
Oh, meaning he, that's different.
Like,
okay.
So he might have found out about an instance of... I mean, we're all dealing on limited information, but all of these employees, coaches, et cetera, for the most part, are deemed... What are they called? Responsible employees. And so if they find out about this, they have to report it to their Title IX office, mm-hmm. who then conducts an investigation. And it sounds like, from what I've read, which is not from the statements, it's still very limited, that he failed to comply with these reporting requirements. But look, if there's a domestic dispute within a household, he doesn't have to go to his employer and tell them. But we did see, remember, Texas, there was a domestic issue and allegations of physical assault by the fiance of the University of Texas basketball coach.
Oh, yes.
Got to the police. The university, within a few weeks, terminated his contract, and then the charges were dropped. And so, look, these things happen, but you don't have an obligation to report on yourself. You have an obligation as an employee or a coach within a university that if you learn of anything within your organization, to report on that.
Oh, this is fascinating stuff. I thank you for making that distinction, because it's still kind of murky, all the details.
It is.
But this is something that we really want to follow, because they were very happy with what Blake had been doing down there. And all of a sudden, when your season's about ready to start and you're dismissing the football coach, everyone wants to know why. Ash, thank you so much. I hope you and Sam have the best holiday weekend. What's in store for you this weekend? Are you going to kick back, lay down by a pool? Are you going to hang out in Vegas? What's in store?
I'm soaking up the sun, going to eat a few hot dogs, drink a few beers, and watch the fireworks. All-American holiday, you know?
Oh, I love it. Hey, thanks again for coming on today. We really appreciate it.
All right. Love it, Clay. Hope you have a great holiday.
Thank you. You too. That's Sam and Ash Injury Law, samandashlaw.com. The new phone number, 702-303-3333. If you're in a crash, call Sam and Ash. We're out of time. Go up to our podcast page after the show. It's up at lvsportsnetwork.com. Get the app. Download the app. It's free. LV Sports Network. And next thing you know, you're streaming without problems for the Android and the iPhone. For Vinny Bonsignor, I'm Clay Baker. We thank you for listening. Coming up next will be Rich Eisen. And then you have JT the Brick Show and Q Myers beginning at noon here on Raider Nation Radio. Have a great weekend, everyone.